This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and it's over. Brendan Sorsby will not be playing college football in 2026. We will talk about that more so from a standpoint of what do we do with Texas Tech, right? We opened up the podcast 2 weeks ago talking about a futures play on Texas Tech, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I would say from the standpoint of this podcast, we are relieved that it is over. I thought it would drag on all throughout the summer. And instead, on Monday night, we find out, nope, it is done. He is moving on to the NFL supplemental draft. And I think, as Brad Powers will point out, and he will join us coming up in a little bit, this is a good thing for the sport, even though all of us listening to this, or 99% of us listening to this, are bettors. We did not want someone who bet on the sport that they played to be playing college football and to set that sort of precedent. So that is done. Later on in the podcast, Ryan Hyatt from Lubbock, Texas, a loyal VSiN listener, will be joining the podcast. What I wanted to do actually with Ryan last week was to just talk football about Texas Tech. And at that point last week, Brendan Sorsby was eligible to play. Now, as we know, he is not going to play this year. So we will get the breakdown of the Red Raiders. What do we do with Texas Tech moving forward? Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Some solid numbers already in the offseason as we are almost 10 weeks away from the start of the college football season. Week zero will be here before we know it. If you have any questions, guest recommendations, CFBpod@vsin.com, CFBpod@vsin.com. And you can also tweet me at @1TimMurray. I will talk about this a bunch with Ryan later on in the show, but you know, it is wild when you think about the schedule that Texas Tech has this year. And it was pointed out, as our buddy Chris the Bear Felica mentioned on Twitter when I tweeted out the schedule, you mean Sark was right? Yeah, Steve Sarkisian probably not too far off on his criticism of Texas Tech's schedule. But as easy as I knew it was, I guess before I fully jumped into it, it made it even more easier. And we talked about it 2 weeks ago when I recommended the bet that I made it even money for them to win the conference. That number is now back with Will Hammond being the projected starting quarterback. But what's wild to me when you look at the odds over at DraftKings. So the odds right now to win the Big 12 at DraftKings: Texas Tech even money, BYU plus 550, Utah plus 650, Kansas State 14-1. Let's stop there. BYU, Utah, Kansas State, none of them on Texas Tech's schedule. Then you go to the next tier: Houston 16-1, Arizona 18-1, Arizona State 22-1, TCU 28-1. Those four teams, the next tier down in the Big 12, all go to Lubbock, Texas. So Texas Tech does not visit any one of those teams. Now, week three, Friday night game, short week for Texas Tech. Houston, Willie Fritz. We're a big fan of Willie Fritz. They've got a veteran quarterback and Connor Wegman. That could be a tricky game. Probably will be a game, let's be honest, on the podcast. The Thursday prior, me, Matt Newmans, probably will have Houston tickets at double digits because of the uncertainty at quarterback. Will that be Will Hammond's debut? Will that be still the Tulsa transfer, Francis? But regardless, as we're looking at it from a big picture, the teams with the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th shortest odds in the Big 12 all visit Lubbock. Then you get to the third tier of the conference, Oklahoma State and Baylor, 30 and 39-1, respectively. Those are the first teams that Texas Tech actually visits. And they visit them, believe it or not, in back-to-back weeks at the end of the season, November 14th and November 21st. And the game against Cincinnati in the middle of the season, well, does it still have the same juice as it was expected to have if Brendan Sorsby was returning? And also, I'm not a big believer in Cincinnati this year. But the schedule, man, It is it's pretty stunning how easy it is for Texas Tech. I knew it was easy, but the more you dive into it, you're like, wow, that is really advantageous for this Texas Tech team. Now, a couple of people chimed in during the week when the news came out that Brendan Sorsby would be out, and they said, it's BYU's year, it's Utah's year. And it might be, but we can get off of the position that we have of Texas Tech if we want prior to the Big 12 championship game, right? So we could potentially take, let's just say, BYU as an underdog. Maybe that's number, I don't know, let's call it 7, maybe 6.5, whatever it may be. Do you try to middle it? Do you just full-on hedge it with a money line play? You set yourself up from a pretty advantageous spot from a betting standpoint at the price that it's at. Now, is it going to move much from now to the beginning of the season? Probably not. So do you have to race and take the even money price? I don't think so, but I did bet it. I didn't double back down. I should have maybe looked to double back down. I believe plus 105. I don't know if plus 110 showed up on Monday night when the news came out that Brendan Sorsby would not play. So we will talk to Ryan Hyatt later on in the show, break down what this Texas Tech team will look like, because, you know, it is worth noting Texas Tech, who was a playoff team last year, lost one regular season game on the road at Arizona State. This was a team that lost 9 players to the NFL draft, lost a lot of defense to the NFL draft. So what will they look like this year? How much did they rebuild? What was that portal haul like? Top 10 portal haul, that said, that included Brendan Sorsby, but still some big pieces that they were able to bring in down at Texas Tech. And there's no doubt they're the most expensive roster in the Big 12. We'll talk some Big 12 and Texas Tech with Brad Powers. The game of the year lines are out, by the way, over at DraftKings, and we alluded to them last week. Matt Grill from DraftKings, who put those numbers up, will join us next week here on the podcast. And I wanted to just pass this along to you guys, some of the line moves, and we'll get into 3 best bets from Brad that he has from a game of the year standpoint in just a little bit. But these were the biggest movements that we saw from the game of the year markets. Arkansas, Utah, week 2. Arkansas opened up 11.5 point dog, moved down to 10. North Carolina hosting Notre Dame. North Carolina opened 24.5. That moved down to 23.5. BYU Notre Dame. I was surprised that this number opened as high as it did. October 17th in Provo, BYU opened 11.5. That's been bet down to 10.5. Michigan State, Michigan. We'll talk about both those games coming up in just a moment with Brad. Michigan State opened 18.5. That's down to 17.5. That game is at the Big House. Tennessee, Texas opened 7. Down to 6.5. Little dog money coming in. Miami, Notre Dame open 7.5, down to 7. Some dog money there. And then Ole Miss and Georgia opened 5.5, down to 4.5 there. So a couple of movements when it comes to the game of the year market. We'll get a little bit more in depth on how the sausage is made with DraftKings Matt Grill later on in next week. But before we take a quick break, just want to give a shout out to my good buddy over at Rainbow Authentics, Mike Kawazoe. I was at the Angels game over the weekend and hung out with Mike and Ku from Hawaii Sports Radio. So always great seeing them, and I'm rocking my Tokyo Toe shirt here. We'll have some news regarding Rainbow Authentics. They'll be back for another year here on the podcast. Always excited to be partnered up with them. So looking forward to another year of Rainbow Authentics, and we'll have some news regarding Rainbow Authentics a little bit later on in the summer months. But let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Coming up next, Brad Powers, college football handicapper. We'll dive into game of the year plays that he has. We'll also look at some group of 5 best bets, win totals, futures, all of that coming up next right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we are back and joined by friend of the show, friend of mine, Brad Powers, college football handicapper at Brad Powers 7 on Twitter, Covers.com as well. Brad, the saga is over. We'll go more in depth on Texas Tech a little bit later on in the podcast with Ryan Hyatt. But as we bettors now know that Brendan Sorsby won't be playing, what does that do to Texas Tech's outlook on the season? And do you think at even money to win the Big 12, it is still worth a look based off of the talent that's on the roster and based off of the schedule that is, as Steve Sarkisian let us know, rather manageable for Texas Tech?
First off, I mean, it was the correct decision for the health of the sport. I mean, I know you and I and mostly everybody watching or listening to this is, you know, in the gambling realm. But I mean, let's face it, we've all known throughout our entire lives that betting is a no-no when you're playing, specifically when you're betting on your sport that you're playing, and even more specific, betting on games that involve your team personally. So I don't care if it's $2 or $2,000. I mean, he should have been suspended for the entire season and shouldn't be allowed to play college football anymore. So correct decision. Moving forward, you know, it does change Texas Tech's power rating 2-3 points, especially early on until Will Hammond's, you know, until we see him 100% healthy. But ultimately, the end goal for them doesn't change too much. I certainly don't think they're going to win the national championship. I didn't think they were going to win the national championship if Sorsby was healthy and playing all year. But they're still the best team, Texas Tech, in the Big 12. They're the most experienced team. They're the most talented team. And for me, the icing on the cake is they have by far the most beneficial schedule in the Big 12. They don't play BYU. They don't play Utah. They get Houston at home. They're still, even with the quarterback issues, they're still a double-digit favorite in every game. So I still like Tech to win the Big 12. I bet it at some worse numbers, but I think it's still playable.
Yeah, even money right now, DraftKings. There was a plus 105 at DraftKings earlier in the week, right when the news came out on Monday. I didn't double dip, but I talked about it 2 weeks ago. I did not think we would have the injunction that we got for the week and a half, whatever it was. They look like dopes in Texas Tech, but as bettors, we don't really care. We just want to figure out, all right, how does that play for us moving forward? So the game of the year lines came out a couple weeks ago at DraftKings, and I know you were rifling through them. So I wanted to hit on a couple. We'll get some best bets from you, Brad, as well. But, you know, massive games, obviously, you know, early on in the year, Ohio State, Texas, we had lines out. That was, you know, it's pick 'em right now at DraftKings. LSU, Ole Miss. I want to start there because I think from an atmosphere standpoint, from a buildup standpoint, maybe it'll be a bit overkill, but this atmosphere has the potential to be the best of the entire college football season. Right now, Ole Miss at DK is a 1.5 point favorite. I think we've talked about Ole Miss. You've got your questions, but based off of this situation, what are your numbers looking like for this primetime game in Oxford in week 3?
I think it's a fair number. And let me say, just, you know, the overview of the 70 lines the DraftKings released, I thought they did a really good job. I only made 7 bets. I mean, I wouldn't, you know,
wow.
A lot of times I would make 15 or 20 if I thought. So this wasn't one of them, but I certainly would lean Ole Miss. You mentioned the atmosphere. It'll be, I'll tell you this, I don't know if it'll be the best, but it'll be the most hostile atmosphere in college football. I mean, when you have the police department of Oxford already commenting on it 6 months in advance, you know that there's some trouble brewing there. So, you know, I'm not wild about either team this year. I certainly think LSU is getting a little too much publicity as being a national title contender in year one. I certainly like what Ole Miss has coming back at the skill positions, obviously quarterback Chambliss, Lacy at running back. I don't like Pete Golding long term, but I think in this atmosphere with the revenge, as long as they don't let the emotions get the best of them, I think the only way to go here is Ole Miss, but I personally haven't bet it yet.
So I do want to get to a game. Matt Grill, when these numbers came out from DraftKings, shot me a note with the biggest movements that we've seen. And I have to guess that you had a reasoning for some of these movements. We'll get to a couple of the best bets that you've got. But one of the bigger moves we saw was an interesting one, in my opinion, because we immediately heard when the game times were released from Arkansas's AD complaining about the late night game in Salt Lake. They opened up 11.5-point dogs, Arkansas did, and that has been bet down to 10. It's been one of the biggest movers in the game of the year market. So that's a week two game, late night game, Utah hosting Arkansas. As we recall last year, Arkansas was outside of the Notre Dame game, pretty much competitive in every single contest, just couldn't get the victories. Did you have a bet on that one? What did you make of that open of 11.5 and the move to 10?
Yeah, I'm a part of it. Power ratings play for me. I only have Utah 7.5 in that game. So that's enough for me. 3.5, 4 points when you're talking around key number 10 or secondary number, with my number being key is 7. It's not the best spot for Arkansas. You mentioned it, the late start time and whatnot. You got a new coach, an entirely different roster, but I think it's a lot of points to be laying, for Utah with a ton of questions there. I know Dampier's back for them, but they have zero returning starters on the offensive line. I like fading teams that are usually in that situation heading into a season. And I just, generally speaking, we're talking from a talent aspect. I mean, these two teams are pretty evenly matched, and I just thought that was a lot to be laying with two first-year coaches, regardless with it being a bad spot for Arkansas.
So one team we've talked about a little bit here on this podcast, and I haven't asked you about that, and I'm curious your thoughts. We're going to find out a lot about these two teams in weeks 1 and 3. That would be SMU, who goes on the road to Florida State week 1. They're a short favorite there. And then Louisville, who plays Ole Miss. Ole Miss is the only top 10 team in the country, or projected top 10 team, that will have a competitive game, at least based off of the odds, in week 1. Week 1 slate is not very good. But Louisville and Ole Miss is a pretty enticing game. And then Louisville hosts SMU in week 3. I want to key in on that game, SMU-Louisville. I'm fascinated by this game. I think there's a lot of unknown regarding Lincoln Kienholz, or Kienholz, however you properly pronounce it. You live in Ohio. You know the Ohio State program very well. What do you make of Louisville, and what do you make of that week 3 game in Louisville between SMU and the Cardinals?
Well, I certainly think the winners, got the inside, seat. I wouldn't say driver's seat, but certainly a good look to be facing Miami in the ACC championship game. And for SMU, if they beat Florida State and somehow win on the road against Louisville, you could almost rubber stamp that they'd be going to the ACC championship game at that point. You starting with SMU, you like that Kevin Jennings is coming back. I mean, it's very rare you get a third year from your starting quarterback in today's day and age. I like Rhett Lashley. They lost both coordinators, so we'll see how that if it impacts SMU. Louisville, this is a big game at home. Jeff Brohm in big games usually as an underdog performs the best. Playing with expectations as a big favorite sometimes leaves a lot to be desired. We lost some big games last year. Cal at home was bad. I thought the bowl game was terrible, almost losing to Toledo. So I haven't bet it. Think it's a fair number. I have SMU slightly higher than Louisville in my power ratings, but if you throw in Louisville's home field edge, I think it's a pretty fair number. I will say, if Louisville loses to Ole Miss, they can very ill afford to lose, a second go around here. Same could be said for SMU if they so happen to lose to Florida State in the opener.
What do you make of that week 1 game in Nashville between Ole Miss and Louisville? We've seen some Louisville support coming to the market. I think it's down to 6.5. There were some 7.5s out there. Maybe we get a little bit of the Trinidad Chambliss hype that pushes it maybe back to 7 before kickoff in Nashville. I'm intrigued by the dog. Haven't bet it yet. What do you make of that week 1 game, which in my opinion, from the big boys, if you will, that's probably the best game of week 1.
Yeah, I'm a part of it. What number I got. I bet Louisville. I mentioned already that, I like Brohm as a dog. That's usually his best role.
And you don't like Golding.
Yeah, and I don't like Golding. Kienholz, I didn't answer it in the last time you asked it, but Kienholz, I've watched his film back to the South Dakota days. He's an intriguing athlete. He was a 3-sport star, actually a good baseball player. Can move around. His one game of extensive action was terrible against Missouri in the Cotton Bowl a couple years ago. I think he'll be a better thrower than what he showed there. I like Brohm's ability to develop quarterbacks. I actually think the ceiling's higher for Louisville at quarterback than what it was last year. So I'm pretty high on him. So much so that I took a flyer long shot, not a big bet, but, you know, pizza money. I took Keynotes to win the Heisman. Not that he's going to win it, but I could see him having a big year. And if they beat, say they upset Ole Miss, has a big game. We talked about the SMU game. We could be talking, you know, the end of September. Keenholtz is top five, top six in the Heisman just by pulling a couple upsets.
Yeah, I actually we did a fun little exercise a couple weeks ago with the fellas from the Solid Verbal, and we did a draft and different tiers, and that was my long shot bet was Keenholtz to win the Heisman, I think around 100-1 or so. Yep. So dual threat guy, high profile game weeks 1 and 3. I certainly agree with it. Let's get to one of your best bets. And, you know, I love situational spots in college football. I think there's some fascinating ones this year. We'll get to one that doesn't have a line yet, but this game does have a line, and that's Penn State at home against USC. This game will be on October 10th. I believe it's going to be the whiteout game. I don't know if that's been official yet.
It's going to be whiteout.
Yeah. All right. So there's, you got the whiteout game. Here's the situation for USC leading up to their trip to Happy Valley. Home to Oregon, home to Washington, and then they travel to Penn State. I actually think the week prior, Penn State has a terrible situational spot. Friday night, opening up Ryan Field at Northwestern, possible look ahead there for Matt Campbell and the Nittany Lions. But to be at home on a little bit extra rest, right? You get an extra day because you play on Friday the week before. What do we make of this spot here? Penn State right now is a short home dog against USC on October 10th.
Yeah, I mean, just start. Forget the whole situational spot, which I agree with your assessment. I made Penn State a 2-point favorite, just generally speaking, in my power rankings, not even factoring in the spot. So, you know, on top of it, let's talk about SC coming off those two big home games. But SC on the road has not been a good look, not only in Big Ten play, but I mean, in the going, traveling from west to east, the last 2 years, they're 0-6 against the spread in Big Ten play. They had the one cover against Notre Dame where there's a missed extra point, depending on the line last year. But let's take it back further. If that's not enough of a sample size, going back to 2012, when SC goes to the Central or Eastern time zones, they're playing, you know, on the other side of the country, they've covered one time in 18 games since 2012. They've only won twice. And, you know, they're expected to win here in the whiteout, on the road, Happy Valley. I mean, you look at Lincoln Riley on the road the last couple of years, they couldn't beat Minnesota on the road. They struggled. Illinois on the road. Couldn't beat mediocre, Maryland, relatively speaking, mediocre Big Ten teams, let alone a whiteout. So, and I also think Penn State, I know it's a bad spot against Northwestern, but they are going to be a significant favorite in their first five games. I mean, it would be disappointing at Penn State at the very worst is 4-1 entering this game, and I think they got a good shot of being 5-0. So I think when this game kicks off, Penn State's favored.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I was actually joking last night on primetime with Matt Newman saying, I can already tell you right now on the October 8th, VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, Matt Newman's will have a best bet on Penn State, and it's hard to disagree, especially with how the market will move. So that's going to be one. You know, let me ask you this, Brad, because I brought this up over the past couple of years, and people have always asked me the question, and you would be someone I'd rather ask about this. I've asked Paul Stone about it. What edge do you need to have in your power ratings to bet a game of the year line in the summer as opposed to waiting to the season?
It's a good question. Usually 3 points is what I'm looking at. Not always, though. There are some situational spots where, and I don't necessarily need it in big rivalry games, where the season, a lot of times around key numbers, I only need a half point to make a bet. So, but usually rule of thumb's always been 3 points.
Let's get to a rivalry game. It is the big brother game, Michigan State. Right now, Sparty is at DraftKings a 17.5 point dog at Michigan. I think the situation for Michigan from October 17th to the middle of November is pretty interesting, right? Because they get Penn State at home on the 17th. They get Indiana at home on the 24th. They've got a weird travel spot to Rutgers. That could be a fascinating game from a situational handicap. They go to Oregon on the 14th. And they play Michigan State on the 7th. Pat Fitzgerald, historically, at Northwestern as a big dog, always someone we tended to like to back. So is Michigan State as a 17.5-point dog at the Big House on November 7th something that you're looking to back here?
It is. I mean, I gravitate towards underdogs in a lot of these game of the year bets, specifically big underdogs and rivalry games. I don't have a huge power ratings disparity. In fact, power ratings say this is about right, but Michigan State's off a bye. You mentioned Fitzgerald's history. Michigan's history against Michigan State's not great. They've only covered four times in the last 18 meetings. They very rarely blow out Michigan State. I think it's only happened five times in the last 31 years where they've won by more than this margin against Michigan State. And this just doesn't, generally speaking, doesn't seem like an all-time great Michigan team. I bet under their win total. I think they're 8-4 type of team. And you mentioned their spot. I mean, for a rivalry game, this might be their fifth most important game in a seven-game stretch to close the season. Penn State, Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State. I mean, the list goes on and on. I think Michigan State, this is everything for them with a first-year coach. I don't think they're going to win, but I think stylistically, play defense, run the football, slow tempo, could be bad weather. I love Michigan State here.
You look at their schedule this year, Michigan State, and year one with Pat Fitzgerald. What are you expecting from the Spartans in year one under, we can't call them Pat's Cats anymore. We'll have to figure out a new name for his Spartans up in East Lansing.
Yeah, I don't generally like the hire, to be honest, so I'm out on a limb there. I don't think it's going to work in the long road. I mean, obviously, I'm just picking a spot here where I like it.
Sure.
4-8 seems the most likely record in my power rankings. 4-8. I don't have them favored in four games, I will say, and that's even with them being favored in their first two. I just think that the recruiting didn't go well for whatever reason under Jonathan Smith. And you know, they were somewhat active in the portal, but not enough to overcome. I mean, they are bottom 3-4 team as far as talent, and closer to the worst than they are to that four mark when it comes to terms of talent. I just don't see it this year for Michigan State. Maybe they can pull an upset or two, but I would be stunned if they flirted with bowl eligibility.
Let's get to another game that I think a lot of people were surprised to see how big this number was. And Matt Grill will join us next week, and I'll ask him why he had this game so high and why and where he's at from a power rating standpoint on the team whose hat you're donning right now, whose team that we cheer for. I believe this is the best team that Notre Dame has had probably from a depth standpoint since the early 90s, but no way could I lay double digits on the road in Provo. October 17th, we don't know the time. I would highly expect it to be a night game. I don't think it'll be big noon because that's going to be Ohio State, Indiana. So ESPN will probably put this in a primetime spot. This thing opened 11.5, which I was surprised at. I thought it would open up kind of in that no man's land of like 9, Brad, but it opens 11.5. It gets bet down to 10.5. I have a expectation that you are part of that move from 11.5 down to 10.5. But this atmosphere is going to be on another level. And I've heard from some folks up in Provo, this might be the biggest game maybe ever in that stadium, especially if Notre Dame comes in as a, top 3 team in the country.
Yeah, I am part of the bet. I bet 11.5, obviously still playable at 10.5. I agree. My number's more in that 9 range. That's where I expected it to be. It's not like I'm low on Notre Dame. I just think the DraftKings lines were pretty high on Notre Dame. We can even talk about a later game that I was surprised they opened above a key number in a big time game where I went against Notre Dame. You talk about the atmosphere. I agree with you. I think it could be the big I love college football. I love the history of it. The only other game I could think of in BYU Stadium history that comes close would be their upset over number one Miami in 1990 that led to Ty Detmer winning the Heisman. That's the only thing that's close. And provided Notre Dame's undefeated, and speaking of that, they're going to be at least a 3-touchdown favorite in their first 6 games. So it would be a stunner if Notre Dame's not 6-0 entering this game. And speaking of that, that worries me a little bit. This might be the first game where they have an opponent that's capable of punching them back.
Yeah.
Not only is the atmosphere going to be crazy, but the opponent is by far the best that they've seen so far this season. So it'll be interesting to see how Notre Dame responds to that. Also, them playing this sort of people, this is old school handicapping 101, but Notre Dame hasn't played in this high of elevation since 2013. So how do they handle that? So a lot of questions there. you know, BYU, I'm expecting maybe undefeated. They got a couple of tests against Arizona and TCU before this, but I do think, you know, obviously their rival Utah is a big game every year, but this one is the game, specifically with what happened with last year's bowl game. I think there'll be a chip on the shoulder for BYU. I think they're very live. Speaking, you like trends. Last seven times, BYU has been at home and has played a ranked opponent. So we're not going left-handed quarterback, Eastland, Mississippi type of stuff. Just when they're at home playing a ranked team, they've been dynamite. Covered their last seven. Hell, they've won six of the last seven outright. So that atmosphere is underrated as far as I'm concerned.
It's funny. I was texting with a buddy of mine who's works on the broadcast team. And I said, how many family members have reached out to you? He said, oh, my God, the amount of ticket requests that BYU folks have got, the Notre Dame allotment, which is probably pretty small, sold out in milliseconds. So that's going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be one of the biggest, best atmospheres of the college football season, but that'll no doubt be the best atmosphere in BYU probably this century. And I love that you went back to 1990. I was listening to a beat reporter talk about it. And by the way, I pointed this out, Brad, on an earlier podcast, and you know, we don't get every line like the NFL puts out a line for every game. You talk about a situation, win or lose, the amount of excitement, the amount of energy that goes into that game for BYU. How about going to Central Florida the following week?
Especially if it's like middle of the day, heat and humidity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I think they can, especially if they're, say they upset Notre Dame. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope they just cover.
Me neither.
but I mean, I'll be picking them to lose that game outright then.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're once again, handicapping 101. And oh, by the way, they host Arizona State the following week. So it's the ultimate sandwich with Arizona State's a pretty good Big 12 team. They get them back at home on Halloween. Then after that, it's Utah. So the spot is screaming to take UCF there. Let's get to the Notre Dame Miami game. Let's just talk about it. I love talking history with you and Notre Dame history, too. I think the Notre Dame-Miami game, November 7th, 26th this year, I think it has a chance to rival the atmosphere of the Bush Push in 2005. I was at that game, the expectation, the anticipation, the deliverance of that game. You know, where does, assuming Notre Dame's undefeated and Miami is also top 10, where do you think, Brad, from an atmosphere standpoint, from a buildup standpoint, where does that game rank for Notre Dame stadium history?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to at least go back to the Bush Push game. You know, the Ohio State game was big, but that was played in September a couple years ago. But there was
Clemson
a lot.
Clemson game with COVID, so it's kind of hard to put it up there.
Yeah, yeah. If they're both undefeated, I think it goes even pushes, you know, past the Bush Push game. I don't know. Bush Push game had an unbelievable buildup to it, but you know, obviously, I thought the game was even bigger than the buildup. So I think it had SC, you know, won that game by 10, which is what they were favored by. I don't know if we remember that game as much. If both teams are undefeated, though, I think it's got a chance to be the biggest Notre Dame home game since the Florida State game in 93, 1-2 later in the season in November. I actually think it could be the most hostile Notre Dame crowd since the Catholics versus Convicts Miami game in 88. There's some hostility from what happened last year. It'll be a different type of Notre Dame crowd, in my opinion. They're usually classy. Welcome to Notre Dame Stadium and this and that. I don't think this is the one game where you're going to get that from the Notre Dame fans. You won't get it if I'm there, and you won't get it from me. I mean, I want death and destruction. However, speaking of that, I bet Miami +7.5.
So once again, now let me ask you this, because BetMGM opened up 5.5, DraftKings opened 7.5. Did you set yourself up for a middle, or did you just take 7.5 on Miami?
I just took 7.5. I didn't expect to have a bet on the game, but man, 7.5. Look, I don't like Mario Cristobal, but him in big games, I mean, he has his team ready in big games. And there's not, you know, I mean, I got Notre Dame above Miami in my power ranks, but there's not that big of a difference in my power ranks. I know it's in Notre Dame Stadium with revenge in November. Weather could be a factor, but I can't get past the key number of 7. So I had to take that hook there. Where you worry about Mario Cristobal is the games that he's supposed to win, not the big games.
No, that's such a great point. And, you know, you look at the Notre Dame schedule, BYU on the road, the Miami game, SMU as well. Let's talk a little Miami, because they are odds on favorites to win the ACC. The ACC is pretty down this year. You and I talked about Louisville. Clemson seems to be headed in the wrong direction. What lowest win total for Clemson and how long? I think I saw 7.5 out there, Brad.
Yeah, 7.5. You got to go probably back to 2011. 2012.
It's crazy. But you look at this Miami team, you know, they do go to Clemson. They're a little bit down. They played North Carolina the week before Notre Dame. So that might be that spot where who knows how this Miami team plays. They always find a stinker at some point. They don't play SMU. You know, what's your ceiling on this Miami team? Do you think Mensa is an upgrade over Carson Beck? How big of the drop is a drop off with Mezidor and Bain both being gone off that defensive line? What's your level of expectation for Miami this year?
Yeah, I think Mensa has got a little bit higher ceiling than Beck. I still at times turnovers. He doesn't always take care of the football, a la Carson Beck. But obviously his mobility gives him a little bit of different dynamic. So I really not much difference between the two. As of right now, maybe I'll get real more specific as we get closer to the season, whether it's like a half point upgrade or downgrade. I love the skill position. Fletcher running back's as good as it gets in college football. I know the best slot receiver in college football is Malachi Toney. Sure. I like that they gave Mensa, you know, his best wide receiver from Duke, but Cooper Barkate comes over from Duke. He's a great player. I'm a little bit worried at the line of scrimmage. I don't think they'll be as good as what they were a year ago, but this is November. They're going to have a bunch of games under their belt at that point. I got to give Mario Cristobal and his O-line coach the benefit of the doubt when it comes to developing offensive lines. They're as good as anybody in the country, but I don't see as much high-end talent as what they had a year ago. Don't see as much high-end talent on the defensive line. However, I'm probably they got some dudes that were five stars, a bunch of them. So I think by November they'll be fine up front. Linebacker fine, secondary returns. I mean, this is a national championship caliber team. There's only, in my opinion, 6 or 7 rosters right now that I feel comfortable. Hey, they can win the national championship. Miami's one of them. And they're head and shoulders above everybody else in the ACC. So I'm expecting Miami back in the playoff, and I think they're capable of making a run again.
November 7th is going to be an all-time day. You're going to get Alabama-LSU, which is kind of like an undercard type of game, which is crazy to say, in Death Valley, Alabama visiting that. Miami-Notre Dame, Michigan State-Michigan, as we alluded to, BYU-Utah, the Holy War, Georgia-Ole Miss, and Oregon-Ohio State, which we can go ahead and lock it in as big noon. Not a bad Saturday in early November. The way it's supposed... Look, as much as I don't like... all of the, you know, changing of conferences. When we do get Oregon, Ohio State in early November, I'm like, okay, conference realignment. Sometimes you're okay with me.
Yes. That I have 9 matchups that Saturday with current top 25 teams in my power rankings. 9. Now they won't all be there when, you know, November comes around, but I've never had that in a single weekend. 9.
That, I mean... Buckle up, boys and girls. I have already booked my, I've already got tickets to Notre Dame, Miami. I fully anticipate being there in South Bend and hopefully enjoying as much football as possible before heading into a raucous environment at Notre Dame Stadium for Notre Dame and Miami. But it will be an epic day, no doubt, of college football. I want to get a little G5 thoughts from you. And, you know, for you, when it comes to this Pac-12 schedule, as someone who leaves no stone unturned when it comes to college football, is it a unique challenge? What do we know? For those unaware, the Pac-12, in their brilliance, has a flex game in the final week of the season. So we don't know who they will be playing. We do know the home teams for that final week of the season. Did that leave it to be challenging for you to bet Pac-12 win totals, Pac-12 futures? What did you do with that unique circumstance of the flex game in the final week of the season?
unique, and I wanted to make sure I read the rules of that particular sports book when they finally hung those win totals to see if they were counting 11 or 12. I mean, they've kind of painted themselves in the corner where I think we kind of know the matchups. I don't think they're going to be able to deviate too much from the games that are kind of already, you know, out there for that final game. Because you mentioned that some teams have to play home games and therefore, you know, it's an even number. So, you know, the other four got to be on the road. How did I handle it? I mean, I'm not afraid to make a bet. So, I mean, you know, if it was, there was a book out there that, you know, said they were, you know, the win totals that they hung were 12, counting all 12. Had I been able to bet a lot at that book, I probably would have just automatically fired every single win total over because they're, you know, they're hanging the same win totals as other books that are counting 11 and they're counting 12. So, I mean, just do the math. Anybody could do that. However, I wasn't super aggressive. Two of my favorite bets, though, come from this league. I like Fresno State over 5.5. They're playing 11 games. They're playing 12. It don't matter for me. I love Fresno State over 5.5. There was some goofiness in some of this. I have a middle. How about Boise State? I love Boise State over 7.5. Again, don't matter if they're playing 11 or 12. I love that bet. One book hung 10.5. So I bet under.
What?
Yeah, I don't know why they hung 10.5 on that, but I bet under there. But when you talk about futures aspect, Boise's still head and shoulders above everybody else in this conference. I expect them to be a little bit more buttoned up this year. Not a big Mattson fan, but come on, his third, fourth year as a starting quarterback. I bet them to win the league.
Who do you have as your best group of five team right now?
Boise State.
Okay.
And a power rating, because there's Boise State. Discussion. No. And I bet them to make the playoff. I don't, you know, highest projected win total, though, it's, you know, there's no slam dunk this year. I think Navy can make a run in the American. I like their schedule, too. So,
yeah, that was one that I was going to ask you about because, you know, you're starting to see the publications come out. I believe Phil Steele ranked Navy as his highest group of five team. I think he had him in his top 25, not his power ratings, but his top 25. So I was curious, you know, when you lose a Blake Horvath, when you lose Eli Heidenreich, when you lose pros at Navy, it tends to be a challenge, but I love their system that Drew Kronick has put in an offense. So I was curious, you know, when you looked at the American, I was surprised when Navy was listed as a favorite around 3-1 or so, but I guess you're not. You think that Navy is the rightful favorite in the American?
Yeah, I got them number one in power ratings, not by much, but and then I like the schedule. So I could see why Phil went that way. I think South Florida, if you're looking for a first-year coach that might be able to make a run, they brought in a ton of power for talent. So, if you know, they hit, they could be a sneaky team there. I think what helps Navy in a normal year, when you mention those losses, I would be like, yeah, they ain't going to be able to overcome them. But then you look at the rest of the teams in the conference. I mean, North Texas that played in the championship game decimated. I think Tulane takes a major step back for the first time in 3-4 years this year. A lot of the teams at the top, you know, South Florida's got a first-year coach, are coming way down from where they were in the power rankings last year. That kind of, even with Navy having some roster turnover, you know what you're getting week after week when it comes to Navy. I like the Woodson kid at quarterback. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, he's pretty good. You know, I want to stick with the armed services thought process because you always, like you said, you always know what you're going to get. And last year, it was pretty stunning to see just how dreadful Air Force was, especially from a defensive standpoint. You know, the UNLV game, that was a late night game back and forth. UNLV wins that one 51-48. Hawaii went to Colorado Springs and did whatever they wanted from a scoring standpoint. Things got a little better as the year went on. But Air Force this year, their win total is sitting at 6.5. And I talked about it last week on the podcast. You know, what are you expecting from the Falcons with the juice, I believe, at -160 to the over on 6.5 wins?
I bet the over. You know, not one of my fair bets, but I got them more in that 7.25 range if you want to get specific. They return some at the skill position, including the quarterback. You know, how bad they were on defense, they can only get better. They bring back everybody. They're in the tops when it comes to returning production on the defensive side of the ball. The Mountain West, you know, taking out teams like Boise, San Diego State, Fresno State, it's a little lighter. And I think, you know, Air Force can take advantage of that. So I think they're a sneaky contender in the new Mountain West.
Yeah, they don't play Hawaii this year. They get a couple of the more easy teams on the road. I think a team that's going to be really polarizing this year amongst us bettors, you know, sickos, however you want to put it, is North Dakota State. You know, the Mountain West kind of gave them no favors, yeah. Right? You know, you look at their schedule and you say, you got to go to Air Force, you got to go to UNLV, you got to go to New Mexico, you got to go to Hawaii. Four of the best teams in projections, they got to go visit all of them. So North Dakota State year one, I think most of us in recent years would say they would jump into the FBS and have no problems. What are you expecting from the Bison year one? Because like I said, that schedule is not that conducive to a ton of success in year one.
Yeah, power rings wise, I got them right near the top. I mean, they're, you know, just behind New Mexico and UNLV is the best team in the league. So, I mean, it's not like I'm down on them from a power ratings aspect, even though they lose two of their best players, lost a couple of draft picks, lost a couple of transfers to the bigger boys. I just, boy, that 9.5, I thought win total was aggressive. And I know it's super juicy the under now, but I like under 9.5. It was one of my favorite bets that I made, like top five win total bet, and I made like 70 of them already. So, I just don't see it. I mean, when you got to play the four big boys on the road, they got to, you know, split them on the road, even though I got them almost a short dog in all four of those games, plus win every other game. I mean, even like their opener against Jacksonville State. I mean, this is not, you know, Illinois State. The teams like that, I'd say that, and that was a team they lost to in the playoffs last year. But just on a week-in and week-out basis, they're facing a lot better competition. And I know Missouri Valley's really tough, but I don't see it. I think 8-4 would be a solid season. So whenever I have like a 1.5 difference, monster bet. As much as I could bet on that win total, I wish I could have gotten down more, but I still think that's playable at current.
So North Dakota State under 9.5 wins. I'm taking a look at the juice right now, just so folks
probably
wonder.
Like -160 again. That sounds like a lot, but last I checked, you don't pay the juice now on winners.
-220 it moved to.
Oh, 220. That's crazy. What is there? Are you looking at isn't there an alt on 8.5?
The alt line is a +144 to the under 8.5.
Yeah, I think that's the better number now. Again, I think their most likely record is 8-4.
Okay. What do you, I guess last one in the Mountain West, the favorites, New Mexico. What a great year they had a season ago. What are we expecting from an encore from the Lobos?
Oh, I like Jason Eck quite a bit. So I fully trust him. I know they lost a couple of their top players, you know, to the portal and, you know, the early to, I think one of them left for the NFL, didn't get drafted. But quarterback's back. The quarterback of the defense is Sun. That linebacker's back. I liked, you know, that they picked up. I liked what they did last year, but he got some guys from the Big Sky. The guys that he had scouted when he was coaching Idaho. So there was actually more continuity than originally expected there. But I think X top five group of five coach, power ratings wise, I got them tops in the conference. They host UNLV. They should be the favorites to win the conference. I bet their wins all over. It's moved. So we won't go there. I won't be naming juice. That's, you know, far away places, but, I think a sneaky bet. I bet them to make the playoff because out of all the group of five teams, my highest projected win total is New Mexico. So I took a 16-1 on them to make the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think this year, and you mentioned it, it feels wide open for who's going to represent the group of five in the college football playoff. Last year, obviously, we saw two teams do it. I would not expect that again, but it does feel wide open.
That. I thought a book hung a bad number on that. It was like -150, under 1.5. I lost that bet.
Really?
I mean, I tried to get down as much as I could. I'm like, there's no fucking way that group of five teams, two of them are going to make the playoffs. At -150, I was like, that should be like -1,000. I lost.
Thank the ACC for their stupid tiebreakers.
Oh, my God. Which the reason. Obviously then cost.
Yeah, and then, yeah.
Unbelievable.
And then, well, you and I mean, That was a discussion we had about the happiness hedge. You and I were pounding, missing the play. I woke up that Sunday morning. I had a pit in my stomach. I'm like, I don't think they're going to make it. I don't know why. And at least I was able to reap some benefits. I know you were as well. So there, I guess there is some happiness hedging, if you will. All right. Final thought for you. Conference futures right now at current market. Is there a bet that you like? You mentioned Texas Tech, even money. That's one that I have in pocket. Is there a conference champion future that you like?
Certainly my best one would be Texas Tech right now. I'm going to look here because I know a lot of stuff moves after I bet it. I think Miami, slight. I know it's minus 135-ish. I think that's still playable. A couple of, I don't mind Navy and the American. I know they're the favorite, but again, who's that other team that's going to step up and unseat them? I just don't see it on paper. So I don't mind that one. Oregon at plus 260. Even if they lose to Ohio State, is Ohio State beating them twice in the same season? I don't know. Oregon plus 260 isn't a bad one for me. I have not dived too much in the group of five, believe it or not. I think New Mexico and UNLV appropriately priced in the Mountain West. Pac-12, boy, I know, again, I'm betting favorites here, but, I mean, Boise at plus 150. I mean, they're going to be a big favorite in that game, so why not? So that,
and they'll be at home if they're the number one seed, right?
If you can find Louisiana plus 750, and I think there's even some better out there, I think they win. The Sun Belt still has divisions. I think they're winning that side of the division on the Sun Belt. So I get why JMU and ODU, who are going to be far worse than what they were a year ago, and maybe they're still favored, slight favorites in the Sun Belt game, but I think Louisiana is probably, as far as longer shots out there, that's my favorite bet on the board.
All right. You can follow him on Twitter at Brad Powers. He's one of our favorites. You can read his work over at covers.com, and I'm sure we'll be bugging him later on in the summer months as we get closer to the start of the college football season. Brad, always appreciate your insight, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
There he is, Brad Powers. When we come back, a deep dive on Texas Tech. We'll actually talk football regarding the Red Raiders. Ryan Hyatt will join us here on the podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, to wrap things up, welcoming in from Lubbock, Texas, our good friend, loyal VSiN listener, Ryan Hyatt. You could follow him on Twitter at Ryan Hyatt Media. His website, theraiderland.com. It's funny, it worked out because last week we wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about Brendan Sorsby going to play, and then I would have asked the question, hey, do you think he'll actually play? We weren't able to figure it out from a technological standpoint. Snafu happens, and it works out beautifully, Ryan, because now we know he will not play. He is going to be heading into the supplemental draft. I want to talk football with you. This is a gambling podcast. I know you want to talk football. To wrap up the mayhem, if you will, how surprised were you that the news broke on Monday night? You actually were kind enough to join me and Matt Newman's on primetime Monday night on VSiN. You know, what's the reaction been the past couple of days down in Lubbock with the news that Brendan Sorsby will not suit up?
I think everybody's just glad it's over and that it came to a conclusion not as fast as it did. That was I told my wife, I felt like the last 6 weeks were just one long day of Brendan Sorsby information and this and that and lawsuits and threats of lawsuits. I think what we saw Monday with the overwhelming stance of the rest of the Big 12 was the tipping point. And when you've got other states, attorney generals filing briefs, and it just, the outcome was not going to work out well for Tech. It was, I think it was going to become untenable for Sorsby, the public scrutiny. And if you're, and he is dealing with a gambling addiction and trying to get his life right, I really don't think Texas Tech was going to be the place, no matter how much Tech officials said, we can support, we can help. And this ends up where I thought it was going to end up in early May. It just took a winding road to get there. And now we'll see which NFL team decides to, I don't want to say take a flyer on him. He's obviously a talented quarterback, but obviously there's some baggage coming into the league now.
So now we move on. And it's funny, I feel like, to your point, we don't, live in Lubbock, but it's the biggest story in college football. I feel like I've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about it, but he is not going to play. And let's look at the quarterback situation. We know if everyone was healthy, it would be Will Hammond day one in week one against Abilene Christian, but he is not healthy. So what is the latest from what you've heard on Will Hammond? And if it's not Will Hammond, is it going to be the Tulsa transfer, Kirk Francis, who gets the nod to start the season?
And almost immediately in May, they begin Texas Tech putting out videos of Will Hammond working out rehabs ahead of schedule. Joey McGuire, Tech coach, has said that he really expects him to be ready for that first Big 12 game against Houston in week three. And we have every reason to believe that that's the case right now. I don't know that he'll be out there against ACU, Oregon State. You probably don't need him. If he can play, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes a series or two just to get him out there. Last year in non-conference, Tech was blowing people out. Baron Morton wasn't playing in the second half of any game. So that would not be an unusual call for Joey McGuire to have your starting quarterback play a series, get him out of there. So it is Jack Francis. He's going to be your backup. Lloyd Jones, III, they nickname him Chubb for some reason. I don't want to speculate. He would be the backup after that. Francis, out of Tulsa, 10-game starter. He's a game manager. He would be your portal insurance policy old guy who's been around. They really like his abilities. They say he's got pretty good accuracy, but he won't be asked to do much in those games. You hand the ball off, you get the running backs involved there with Cameron Dickey and, Jacoby Williams. We can't wait to see what the impact is going to be with Quentin Joyner, who I believe they brought in last year out of USC to be the number one running back, and he got injured in early camp in August. So those first two games, we're not going to learn much about this offense. Even if Hammond does play some, I think we'll learn a little bit more maybe about the defense than the offense.
Well, let's talk about the running game, because it's a great point. And I think a lot of people, as you're cracking open your preview magazines, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember Joyner, and he gets hurt last year. And we thought, OK, that's going to be a big setback. It wasn't really. So is the strength of this offense, no matter who plays quarterback, the running back position?
I think so. And I think it's going to set up everything. I think it should set up everything. Your ability to run play action and attack downfield in the passing game. You're going to have two safeties a lot of times against Texas Tech for different reasons. But you're going to have run support, I think. You're going to have run stop linebackers out there on the field. And you look at the explosiveness of Jacoby Williams, who's one of your top kick returners. He can take it to the house. Then you've got Cameron Dickey, who really ran well between the tackles for an offensive line last year that didn't always block that great in short yardage situation. He had to do a lot of yardage after contact. And then Joyner is the wild card. Over 5.5, nearly 6 yards of carry there at USC. Everybody was really excited to see what he could do. They talk about him being an every down back. He can catch the ball. If I am Mac Leftwich, and I'm not, the Texas Tech offense coordinator, I would absolutely build everything around this run game, force the defenses to come up, and then try to pick them apart on the edges and downfield.
You know, when Will Hammond gets 100%, and we don't know when that date will be, how dynamic of a runner can Will Hammond be?
He doesn't have to be that dynamic. He just has to do what I call, extend the play when something breaks down, or be effective enough in a little zone read action or a little RPO. Not a lot. You don't want to do it very much, particularly after a guy has a knee injury. But that they've got to respect him as an attack, as a weapon back there. But this is a guy who came out of Hutto, Texas. That's at the highest level in Texas high school football. He led the state in passing nearly 4,000 yards as a high schooler. He could run. He's big, strong, 6'2", really filled out. And I think one of the things you'll see with him is he has the ability to attack downfield and middle of the field better than Baron Morton did for a couple of reasons. Morton was injured a lot. His arm strength really wasn't there. Hammond can really spin it. And that's just something that hadn't existed in this offense the last year and a half or so with Baron Morton. It was a lot of dink dunk. It was those outside, bubble screens, which I absolutely hate. There's 5 million things that have to go right on that play. I hate that play. I hated it when I was in high school. I hate it today. And every quarterback hates having to throw it. But that's really all Tech could do last year. It was a very limited version of the offense.
So looking at the pass catchers this year, Caleb Douglas is gone. Reggie Virgil is gone. Who are some of the names we should know from a wide receiver standpoint? What will this passing attack, Ryan, look like?
I think it's
going to
kind of start inside out with your tight end, Terrence Carter Jr., and he's a big, big, strong, fast guy that can match up, and he forces you to choose how you want to defend him. And as we know, those guys are security blankets for quarterbacks, that they can find a soft spot and settle in. Beyond that, now you really get into some of those guys that have come in. You got Kenny Johnson out of Pitt. They really like what he's and in fact, I think he's going to be one of your, whatever you call a starting wide receiver in this offense. They're going to rotate in a ton of guys. They liked Malcolm Simmons coming in on the portal out of Auburn. Again, a field stretcher with some speed. And then you get back out with Micah Hudson, who 2 years ago was the number one high school recruit out of Texas, and he couldn't get on the field at Tech. He transferred after his freshman year, went to A&M for 38 minutes, and then came back, not on scholarship at Tech last year, and they really think that he can be at the X spot, as they call it, the field stretcher. He's got good speed. He's big, strong, and he just loves to go get the football. So it's a cast of thousands. And I left out Coy Aiken, who's back this year, and he's just kind of one of those guys who just shows up, and he gets his five or six catches, and he makes one or two plays, and you go, wow, that was really instrumental. But they had to get faster. It was a really and again, Tech couldn't really throw it downfield much last year with Morton, but they've got to be able to blow the top off a defense that I think is going to have to come in and support the run. They've got to be able to get it downfield more effectively in the games that matter. And for this Texas Tech schedule, they may not play a game that matters until the Big 12 title game, if they get there or if they can get into the college football playoff. But they had to become more dynamic, and that's what they think they've done with some of the additions there in the portal.
Yeah, the schedule we'll get to here in just a moment, and I tweeted about it. We've discussed it. It's been discussed nationally. Obviously, Steve Sarkisian has taken his shots regarding the schedule, and what I want to talk about is not only the non-con, which is laughable, but the Big 12 gave them this the most gracious schedule, and just the way it worked out this year with the teams and who's expected to be good. But final thought on the offense here, Ryan. Offensive line, you know, take it for what you will. Phil Steele has his, you know, rankings of, you know, best units per the conference. He has their offensive line third, which amongst the other units that are out there is actually pretty weak because the belief is this Texas Tech team is just head and shoulders above everybody else in this conference, at least from a talent standpoint. What do you make of this offensive line this year?
I think they're going to be okay. And they, if they could just be a little bit better in spots, you know, they've got a lot of returning experience. Howard Sampson on the left side was really developing, I thought. Hunter Zambrano's back there at guard, and they've got Sheridan Wilson. So your entire left side and interior is back. They bring in Jordan Church out of Louisville, a really athletic guard on the right side. They're projecting him. And then back after starting as a freshman, Jacob Ponton, also known as holding and offsides Jacob. Sorry, Jacob, but that's just the fact. Seriously, all this offensive line has to do to improve in some respects. Don't have false starts. They had a tremendous problem with false starts last year, particularly in the red zone. I lost track of how many times Texas Tech had a first and goal at the 8 or 9, and all of a sudden it's first and goal at the 15 or 14, and they would commit incredibly dumb pre-snap penalties. That was a big mantra during the offseason and during the spring, is cleaning up the pre-snap penalties on this team. Do that, and you're infinitely better right there.
So let's get to the defense, and I think the defense, I would imagine you agree, is going to be more of a strength than the offense. That said, you're losing a lot, right? You're losing the number 2 overall pick in the NFL draft in David Bailey. You're losing the heart and soul of the defense in Jacob Rodriguez. You're losing a Lee Hunter. You're losing a Romello Heights. You're losing a Skylar Gil Howard. So there's a lot of production that goes out the door in totality, by the way, for those wondering, 9 players in the NFL draft this year for Texas Tech. So where do we start for the defense? And it was awesome last year. I expect it to be good. Can it be awesome again, for lack of a better term?
I think what shocked me last year with all those guys you're talking about and bringing guys in the portal and putting them on the field is how quickly they gelled. And that's a tribute to Shielwood his scheme and those defensive coaches getting a cohesion out there that I didn't expect. So I think that helps you go, okay, if they could do it last year, can they do it with these players? We'll start at linebacker. I don't know how you replace a Rodriguez who kind of is in that Zach Thomas lore now at Texas Tech. But I guess you go out and get a two-time Big 12 linebacker, Austin Romain, out of Kansas State. He's different than Rodriguez. He's more, I think, of a middle, pure middle type guy. But he has, I'm going to say it, he has a nose for the football. He gets in on tackles, and he's real active. And I think with him and Ben Roberts right there in the middle, and Ryan Curry as an outside linebacker, that you've got a really good group that I think they can play some concept games with. I think that Texas Tech can blitz with the linebackers maybe a little bit more. They can drop off into coverage. Last year, they really didn't blitz a whole lot. That front got to them so effectively with a four-man front. Tech didn't have to blitz. I think they will this year. So the linebacking core, I think, is really going to be the strength maybe early on while we find out, okay, what does Trey White look like out of San Diego State? Everybody thinks he's a great edge guy. He steps up in class. This is like a horse, you know, moving up in class. We're going to see, you know, can this guy be a two-turn edge rusher as opposed to a one-turn guy? Same thing on the other side. On the right side, they got Adam Trick out of Miami of Ohio stepping up. You know, Romello Hyde comes from Georgia Tech. Bailey was playing at Stanford. So these guys are coming in, not having played at the level that those guys were last year. Bryce Butler comes in as another transfer, and I really like A.J. Holmes in the middle. He's a space eater. And I think this could be a defense that's more gap control the line of scrimmage. Maybe they don't pressure and get interior pressure as much or edge pressure, but they allow the linebackers to do their job.
And the biggest big-ticket player they got outside of Sorsby was the defensive lineman from Wake Forest. Everybody wanted him, Mateen Igbaragba. I'm sure I butchered that, but a big fella. Big Mateen, I like that. But, you know, we know it's hard to get girthy guys in the defensive line in the portal, and they're very expensive. And as we know, Texas Tech not afraid to throw around some cash. What have we heard from Big Mateen, the Wake Forest transfer? Is he going to be a difference maker
on
that D-line?
He's going to play. How much of a difference maker will kind of depend on A.J. Holmes and that rotation. But we've seen Texas Tech the last season be willing to rotate in a ton of defensive interior linemen, trying to keep them fresh. So we're going to see him. I've been told that he's still a little bit raw with some concepts that he maybe has gotten away with just incredible athleticism, much like myself for all my years. It's so condescending. So there might be a learning curve even coming from Wake still, but, again, a lot of people wanted him. Everybody agreed there's huge upside on the talent. So we'll find out that night against Houston, probably what we're going to get out of that.
Yeah, let's jump into the schedule. So Texas Tech, as I alluded to, and as many of you know, but the schedule is, it's a joke. And look, you know, I'm a Notre Dame fan, as everyone knows. Go ahead and take your drink for a mention of Notre Dame. But this schedule, it's, and once again, it's not all Texas Tech's fault. Let me point that out. The non-con, sure, that's their fault. They did Abilene Christian. You know, they've got Oregon State, who is probably further down than they anticipated in Sam Houston. But this Big 12 slate, it's wild how it broke, where BYU, Utah, and Kansas State, per the odds, the next three after Texas Tech aren't on the schedule. And then the next four in the conference future odds, Arizona, Houston, Arizona State, TCU all go to Lubbock. So based off of Big 12 futures, the team with the shortest odds that this Texas Tech team will have to go on the road to play is Oklahoma State, who the hell knows what they're going to be this year, right, Ryan? With North Texas basically transferring over to Oklahoma State. Maybe they have the best quarterback in the conference, and Drew Mestemaker, we'll see as he goes up a level. So when I talked to you, when the news first initially came out, it feels like a million years ago that Brendan Sorsby would not be playing, and then he was playing, and now he's not playing again. I said, you know, Ryan, at even money to win this conference, it would be a catastrophic disaster if they don't make the championship game. And then once we're there, we got an even money ticket. We can do some creative things with whoever they play. So the schedule is remarkably manageable for the unique situation that they're in this year with Brendan Sorsby not playing and Will Hammond coming off the ACL injury.
Yeah, it still makes me uncomfortable talking about Texas Tech football and saying anything less than 10 wins would probably be a colossal failure. Anything less than 10 wins for this team with this schedule would be a failure. That means you have lost three games to teams that you should absolutely beat or wear out. And I know, and we've dealt with this the last couple of years in preseason handicapping with the portal, and it's hard to know exactly what a team really is until we see them out on the field, maybe for a couple of weeks. And even with these non-conference schedules for a lot of teams, we're not even sure then, you know, it's almost until we get to mid, late September, but Texas Tech should absolutely run the table. And my only thinking on the scheduling is, did the Big 12 look at what happened last year with BYU losing twice to Texas Tech? And the game was competitive there in the Big 12 title game. It didn't look like it at the end, but it was competitive. And it was competitive in Lubbock for a long stretch, too. But did that hurt the league having that rematch? And do you say, okay, let's set Tech over here and see if they can get back? And then we'll have three teams on the other side. Whoever comes out on the other side, even though there are no divisions, okay, but out of that, somebody's going to play Tech who hadn't played them, most likely. Does that give the league a better chance statistically to get two teams into the playoff? That's the only – I don't think that's a conspiracy. I just think that's the only logical explanation I can see.
So, Ryan, let's sum up with looking at the outlook on this year and your belief. Win total sits at 10.5, minus 190 to the over. If you think they'll go undefeated, it's plus 230 at DraftKings. Even money to win the Big 12, that's a ticket that I've already, a bet that I've already made. You can make that at DraftKings right now. The loss of Sorsby, I guess we'll sum it on this. When you look back at last year, they got exposed in the Orange Bowl against Oregon. And I don't think, and this is my opinion, I'm curious yours, I don't think the loss of Sorsby changes their trajectory in the Big 12. I still think they're the best team in the conference. I still think they win the conference. The schedule is, as we discussed, very manageable. BYU's good. Utah's good. We'll see what else, you know, emerges in the conference. But I do feel like the ceiling isn't as high with Sorsby gone. Do you agree or disagree? Can Will Hammond get them to the heights that Sorsby was expected to try to get them to in 2026?
No, I think that's a fair assessment. And we talked before, none of this was going to change how I viewed this team in the regular season from win totals or championship futures. And if you bought on the dip, there were a couple of dips out there on this, you know, you could have bought. But I do agree the idea that once they got Sorsby and when they had to get him after the Hammond injury last year, that was the thinking that maybe this is a guy who could get you past that first round in the college football playoff or, you know, get you that win. And that's going to be, I think, the challenge for this program this year is that you could run the table. You could absolutely be 13-0 back in the college football playoff, have a bye. Can you score a point? Can you show up and look like you belonged on that? Because everybody is going to be saying exactly what we're saying right now. They hadn't played it. They played one game. They played one team in the Big 12 title game, basically. Now, we could be wrong. Houston could go out and have a great year, and we could be talking about, hey, that was a great win over Houston from a Tech standpoint. Sonny Dykes could work his magic again down there in Fort Worth. But I don't see it right now. And we're right now. Yeah, I think you look at this team two different ways, regular season, and then let's evaluate and see what they look like in December and have they proven that they can be better in December than they were a year ago.
You could follow him on Twitter at Ryan Hyatt Media. You could follow him on his website, theraiderland.com. And at least three nights a week, you can catch him eating a rare steak at Brian's Steakhouse in lovely Lubbock, Texas. Ryan, I'm happy we were able to talk X's and O's, talk football. The Brendan Sorsby saga is in the rear view. I know you were getting some heat down there in Lubbock because you were the oddball on, you know, saying this guy shouldn't be playing right now. So, I wouldn't say goodness prevails, but I'm happy for you that we get to talk some football. Appreciate you, as always, throughout this whole situation, giving us the insight. There he is, Ryan Hyatt. That's going to do it for our podcast. Thanks to Brad Powers. Thanks to Wyatt, our producer, and also Ryan Hunter. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.